Hannah, and our guests today are Michael Thomas Goodrich. He is the author of Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 through 1947. It has been out for 9 years, and something wonderful has occurred. Paul English, our other guest, became the narrator for this book, and it is now available as an audiobook at hellstormaudiobook.com. And Mike's website is thomasgoodrich.com. Anyway, it was just a slaughter. And many of the people that were doing the bombing came home and could not live with what they had done. I had an uncle who was just, it just destroyed him. And that's true for a lot of people, I believe. People aren't designed to slaughter one another. It doesn't matter how much propaganda they have been incited by. Our natures are that we should not slaughter each other.
Well, not like that.
Not like
definitely not like that. Not waging war on women and children.
No.
That's the big difference, really, with World War II.
Yes.
That's where it starts to become unhinged.
Yes.
Yeah. You know. Well, this is...
Yep. Oh, go ahead.
Well, this depravity that we call World War II, this evil... well, English words haven't developed far enough that we can actually describe what occurred in World War II. We just simply don't have the words. Hellstorm, that's the best I could come up with, but it still doesn't describe what's in this book. Now, this audio book. But it's something that hasn't stopped. We're acting like, or at least we're talking like it's in the past. It's not. It's in the very present, and it's going to be in our future unless we do something about it. What's going on in the Middle East right now is just, in my opinion, a continuation of World War II. Mm-hmm. in so many ways. In other words, what worked then, they think, will work now, and apparently it is. United States, we haven't been in control. We Americans have not been in control of our government for decades and decades and decades. And we're living the results right now. We're living the consequences of us sleeping while this Jewish infrastructure has taken over every part of American society, virtually everything. And their hatred of some of the nations in the Middle East and their desire to get rid of them, all they had to do is basically a little propaganda here and press a few buttons there, and they've got the Americans not only fighting and dying for greater Israel, but for paying for the war itself, paying to fight and die. That's going on to this very day. This performance, of course, occurred during World War II, basically. Getting the nations, starting with UK, our good old Winston Churchill, and the United States, our even better FDR, putting them on the side of the Jewish worldwide power grid, and that's the consequence. That's what happens. We took out the greatest nation, perhaps in the entire world, that is Germany, certainly the leader of Europe at the time, a nation that was actually fighting for us, all of us, white. Actually, this, I can go further than that. Paul, interrupt me if you disagree, but Germany was fighting for more than just the white world. It was fighting for the world, period. To try to free the world. It's very simple. Hitler's statements and comments on this, that says it right there as far as I'm concerned. But of course, the propaganda and the Jewish hatred of Germany and the fear that Germany might succeed beyond what they had already succeeded in, that is creating this miracle almost overnight in Germany. That was very scary stuff, and of course we know that what happened then. This gang rape of Germany with America, the Soviet Union, and UK, and France, and We simply took out our leadership. And that's the reason we're so hopeless and forlorn right now to this very day. We have no real leadership in the world. Italy's starting to stand up, thank God. Austria, Hungary, Poland. It's finally coming around, but ever so slowly. Will there be enough time for them to finally overwhelm and take back what's ours? That is our continent, Europe. But maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but I think it's a very simple progression from looking at World War II and seeing what's going on right now and what will go on in the future. Right now, as we know, they're always, the U.S. is always ratcheting up the tension against Iran. And of course, that's Israel's greatest enemy right there. I don't think it's any coincidence that now we're looking at Iran. This entire scenario that I'm talking about, it could have devastating consequences because it just so happens that Iran is backed by not only Russia, but China. And, this is, we're entering a world-ending period right now, unless we get a grip on this. And apparently we still haven't. But that's the good news about shows like Deanna's and the internet in general, is that more and more people, more and more important and powerful people are paying attention. They're suddenly, I don't want to be too despondent on this or too pessimistic, but perhaps the internet and people like Deanna, who are having a much greater impact on this world than we could ever imagine at this point. I for a fact, I won't name names, of course, but I for a fact know some extremely important, powerful people who do almost a perfunctory. It's almost a religion with them. They do listen to all the alt-right media they can possibly get because they know they're catching another side of this entire scenario. Mm-hmm. And that's what gives me confidence. That's what gives me the spring to jump out of bed every morning, is because, in my opinion, we're winning. My only concern is, will we have enough time to win?
Right.
And then perhaps put an end to what was World War II. Stop this nonsense that's going on to this very day. But I don't know if Paul agrees with me, everything I've said so far.
I do. I mean, I do. And I think, I tend to think that World War III began the minute that World War II ended. It's just been conducted by different means. And I think the other... an aspect of inquiring into World War II, although for, I suppose, the big event for most people within recent living memory would be 9/11. If certain pennies drop, and they have done for millions of people around 9/11, then there's a series of questions that come up after that. One of them is, if they were lying to me about this, what else have they been lying to me about? And I think that's one of the reasons why there's so much fog put around World War II by the official court historians. There has to be, because they wouldn't have anticipated the free flow of information that we've been able to enjoy for the last 20 years. I know that steps are afoot to shut it down, and they may be partially successful in all sorts of ways, but once you've had certain questions thrown in your head with regards to World War II, you begin to see that, oh, hang on, this is not an isolated incidence of deceptive communication. Good grief, this appears to be the rule. That's the next thing you get to. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, once you begin to question these things, that veneer of authority which they sit in, which has got most people being quite compliant with, begins to disintegrate. And it has to disintegrate because it's not good. It attracts the worst sort of individuals who want to be in power purely because they don't want anybody else to be in power, not because they could do anything with it. If we look at all the characters, the leading characters from World War II, why is it that we are more fascinated with Mr. Hitler than with anybody else? We're not fascinated with Stalin. No one's fascinated. No one says, wow, communist Russia was fantastic. There's a civilization. No one says that. You don't have to... You don't have to sit around and ponder it very long. They just literally, you just go, that looks grotty and useless and rubbish and mad. What's going on? Why are those people all dying? Oh, I see. And then, of course, the the real narrative starts to come out. Then you realize that the real narrative is never being communicated with any force, with any muscle behind it. It never becomes the established predominant view. You always have, you know, challenging views, but the predominant view is the one that's got all the money behind it by the people that own the press, who then you begin to understand why they never relent with this. They can't. Mm-hmm. They've got to, they're like hamsters on the wheel. They've got to keep the lie spinning 24 hours a day. They've just got to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we come along, I suppose, in many ways like little wasps and irritants and start stinging them in their tender bits. And they don't like it too much, which is good for us. And we just need an awful lot more stinging power. We're a swarm. We shouldn't think of ourselves. We need to be an enormous swarm of stinging, foul-tempered hornets, because we've got a lot of things to sting.
You have such a way really with do. Making things very definitive, and I like your analogy.
Do we have
something like that? You know.
Do we have a few minutes here, Deanna?
Yes, we have about seven.
Well, okay. We'll throw this one in. This is about 3.5 minutes long. Here we go.
Okay.
By noon, February the 14th, a strange silence settled over what once was Dresden. The city was absolutely quiet, Götz Berglinder remembered. The sound of the fires had died out. The rising smoke created a dirty, grey pall which hung over the entire city. The wind had calmed, but a slight breeze was blowing westward, away from us. And then, shattering the calm, came the sounds. I suddenly thought I could hear sirens again, continues Berglinder. And sure enough, there they were. I shouted, and by then we could already hear the distant whine of engines. The roar of the engines grew louder and louder. As US bombers began blasting the rubble to dust, American fighter planes zeroed in on the thousands of refugees at the park, along the river, and in other open spaces. Recalled Anna Marie Wayman. We looked up and saw how they flew lower and lower. They're coming here, we screamed. A few men took over and gave commands. Split up, scatter, run into the fields, down on your faces. While we were lying in the dirt, our hands clawing at the earth as if we wanted to crawl inside it, they came after us, wave after wave, circling, flying low, shooting with their machine guns into the defenseless people. Popping noises right and left, clods of earth flying up, screams. Like everyone else, I expect, I prayed. Dear God, please protect me. A few seconds pause as the plane circled in order to come back at us again. The men screamed, up, up, run on, run toward the trees. But again, that popping noise as they fired without mercy into the people, and screams and clods of earth flying around. I took Hildy by the hand, and without turning round once, without even looking to see how many people did not get up again, we ran. Panic broke out, said 15-year-old Gerhard Kernemund. Women and children were massacred with cannon and bombs. It was mass murder. While we literally clawed ourselves into the grass, I personally saw at least 5 American fighter bombers, which from an altitude of approximately 120 to 150 meters, opened fire with their cannon on the masses of civilians. My companion was killed beside me in this attack. There was a hole in his back the size of a palm. Near the park, zookeeper Otto Sailor Jackson watched in stunned disbelief as one American pilot mowed down people running in the street. He attacked several times, flying very low, firing from cannon and machine guns into the refugees. Then he flew low over the zoo and made several firing runs at anything he could see that was still alive. In this way, our last giraffe met her death. Many stags and other animals which we had managed to save became the victims of this hero. Although the raid lasted only 10 minutes, the Americans returned the next day, and the next, seemingly determined that not a single living thing should survive in Dresden. There seemed to be no end to the horror, said Eva Bayer. So there we go. That's from chapter 4.
There may be some folks out there, probably not many, who do not know the story of Dresden and how it was singled out, a town that hardly been damaged during the war, but in early 1945, Stalin more or less insisted that the U.S. and the British do something to help his Red Army move across and take some of the heat off of them. And I'm not sure who mentioned it, but Dresden was the location where they wanted to make a statement. And Dresden, by the way, was considered it was a show place on Earth. It was a beautiful city. It was full of beautiful cathedrals, art museums, churches. It was a glorious, beautiful place where lots of people throughout the world came for vacations before the war, of course. But on this night, this would have been Fasching. Fasching is the German equivalent of Mardi Gras. On this night, in the last winter of war, Dresden had a population of roughly 1.5 million. 600,000 who normally lived there, and another 800,000 people who were refugees from the east, fleeing the Red Army, fleeing the horror that was the Red Army. And many of them landed in Dresden. And so we have a city that's packed, literally packed with people. Men, women, children, old men, the old people. Every place that could be occupied by a human being was. And yet, on this night, a few of the Dresdeners themselves decided to go out in their costumes and celebrate, as I said, Fasching, the Mardi Gras. But the Americans came in, the British came in, I believe it was, first around midnight. And like I said, Dresden was their target, a place to make an example to the rest of Germany. And at first they blew the town to bits, destroyed everything with their explosive bombs. And then a little bit later, an hour or two later, I forget exactly how long, but in came the planes carrying the incendiary bombs that are fire bombs. And their design was to do nothing but stoke fires, start fires, start burning everything that was crumbled and crushed. And of course they did. It was a terrific firestorm. And ultimately, after 24 hours of, several hours of nonstop bombing, but raid after raid, the entire city was in flames. And it's been estimated that the death toll for Dresden was anywhere from 250,000 to 400,000 people dead. Interestingly enough, for your listeners, I'm sure many of them have heard this also, but the modern day account of Dresden, that is, people who think they know more than the people back then did, are estimating that there was no more than 25 or 30,000 people killed in Dresden that night. And these are people today making that estimate. I'll tell you what, I'll take the people living there at the time and those who came in to examine what had happened from Berlin and from Switzerland and neutral countries. I'll take them and the International Red Cross, who gave me this estimate of anywhere from 250,000 to 400,000 any day over what modern-day propagandists would like us to believe. I suppose their idea is we'll limit the number of people killed by making these wild, stupid under-assumptions and thereby decrease the crime itself. That's their thought process, I'm sure. But there is simply no way a town with 1.5 million people crammed into this inner city that could be utterly destroyed, that could be bombed and blasted and then incinerated. No, I go with the Red Cross and the bureaucrats from Berlin who did the estimation back then.
Right. All righty, we will be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it. At AROutfitting.com.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back. And our guests today are Michael Thomas Goodrich. His website is thomasgoodrich.com. And Paul English, the narrator of Hellstorm. His website is hellstormaudiobook.com. And I would like to share something with you regarding Dresden. When I was writing my trilogy, like Mike, I do a lot of very, very deep research. I don't have the first person type. Mike writes with such passion because he does bring in the individuals. He's got something that no one else that I know has. And I love him for that. And Anyway, let me share a document that I found and referred to it in one of my books and also made it known on the internet. It's from German History and Documents and Images, Volume 4, Forging an Empire, Bismarckian Germany, 1866 to 1890. And it's called Manifesto to the Governments and Peoples of the Christian Nations, Threatened by Judaism, the first anti-Jewish Congress in Dresden, September 11th through the 12th, 1882. in the following manifesto of the first anti-Jewish Congress held in the Saxon capital shortly after the first wave of German anti-Semitism peaked. Participants wove virtually all the threads of the Jewish question into the fabric, the fabrication of a monumental struggle against international Jewish parasitism, claiming that all Christian nations had no choice but to recognize the Jew as biologically alien. It called for a reversal of Jewish emancipation and for the expansion of an anti-Semitic movement of self-protection. The meeting's delegates constitute a virtual who's who of German, Austrian, and Hungarian anti-Semites at the time. Now, this is a 10-page document, but please note the date, the place, September 11th, 1882. They met for 2 days. And so Dresden, I suggest that Dresden, inasmuch as it was non-military, of course, whether it was a military target or not, every city in Germany was bombed. They first bombed all of the cities above 50,000 above, and then they went for everything. No matter how small the town was, they were going to destroy not just Hitler, but every single German. And Dresden was a target, a definite target. The other thing that I find interesting is that FDR and Churchill both held the similar positions in the government, in their respective governments, during World War I. And then they followed through by becoming the heads of state to follow through with World War II. And World War I, between World War I and World War II, the Allies were simply reloading. They were simply devising more bombs. It was just a cessation of active warfare so they could rearm re-indoctrinate people and devise lies about World War I against Germany. The Germans came into Belgium. They were cutting off the children's hands, and they were cutting down apple trees, and they were doing all of these terrible things which weren't true. None of it was true. But they needed time to rearm and to further their indoctrination, their programming of their respective populations. Anyway, I just wanted to share this document.
That's interesting about Dresden. I didn't know that. It had an ancient target on its back, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I will send you this document. I'll send both of you this document.
Thank you. I think I've seen it actually, but it was great for you to go through that, because when I was first seeing you, obviously you're aware of this sort of never-ending, infinite revenge pattern that exists over on the other side.
Yes.
And I think the thing about Dresden as well is it was just a matter of months before the war ended. You think
yes.
about that. I mean, the more I've thought about that, that's the bit that really gets you. It's not, even if there'd only been, 5,000 people in there or whatever, the whole, it reveals the nature of the sickness towards it in terms of eradicating German life. That's
right.
What the goal was.
Okay, gentlemen. We will be right back in 3 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure,
fingers and or toes often go cold. Arms and or legs often go to sleep. Sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe. Short walks cause cramping or pains in legs. Memory is not as good as it used to be. Ankles swell late in the day. Chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong part, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Reaching for a dream of peace to break the madness.
You know the answer.
All righty. We are back, and our guests today are Michael Thomas Goodrich, the author of wonderful, wonderful books, including Hailstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 through 1947. Our other guest is Paul English, who is the narrator of that book, Hailstorm. And you may acquire that book. It's an audiobook at hailstormaudiobook.com. All righty. We have time for some more files, audio files. We have about 20 minutes. If you have some others.
I think Paul has gone. I think he'll be back shortly.
Oh, no, I was here all along. What I did was, for the break, I stick myself on mute.
Then, of course, I forget to unmute myself.
I do that, too.
There you go. Yes. Everybody does it, really, but I'm quite prepared to admit my stupidity in public.
Well, I just did too.
Oh, it's great. Why don't you do it too, Mr. Goodrich? You need to mute yourself and forget and come in and see. We can all do it then. It'd be great.
Yeah, I hate to admit it, but I never mute. I forget to mute and I slip off to go get a drink or do whatever people do. And then I come back and hopefully I've made no noise putting the headset back on, but I need to get with the program. I need to get a little more professional about this. But
I got a clip here anyway. This is from... what chapter is this? I don't even know what this clip is. This is a couple of minutes, 2.5 minutes. The Devil's Laughter is from that, which is chapter
5, I think. Here we go. North of Silesia, the plight of trekkers in East Prussia was even worse. As isolated Wehrmacht units desperately defended their shrinking Baltic beachheads, millions of refugees poured into the coastal pockets. Unlike the situation at Breslau, military authorities to the north could not simply order superfluous civilians from their lines. With their backs literally to the sea, only the slow and treacherous evacuation by boat was an option. Consequently, at Memel, Königsberg, Kolberg, Danzig, and other besieged cauldrons, the situation was appalling. Jürgen Thorwald describes the chaotic conditions at Pillau, where thousands of refugees sought shelter. Every alley, every street was packed with their vehicles. People were waiting in every harbour shed, in every wind-sheltered corner. Among them stood their beasts, bleating, snorting, lowing. The pregnant women giving birth somewhere in a corner, on the ground, in a barracks. Some of them had been raped on their flight, and now they were trembling for fear they would give birth to a monster. The strangely pale faces of girls going up and down the streets asking for a doctor. The wounded and the sick, in constant fear they would be left behind, concealing weapons under their blankets to force someone to take them along, or to end their own lives if the Russians came. The orphans who had been saved from their asylum somewhere at the last moment and tossed onto carts with nothing around them but a blanket, and who were now lying on the floors with frozen limbs. The Russian prisoners of war, brought west under orders from above, walking on wooden soles, their tattered overcoats held together with paper strings. The old people who had lain down in some doorway at night and had not awakened. The hungry for life who found each other to mate among the ruins in broad daylight. And the wild-eyed insane ones who rushed from house to house, from wagon to wagon, crying for their mothers or their children. Over it all, the grey sky, snow, frost and thaw, and thaw and frost and snow, and the chill, killing wet. There, the devil's laughter. That was from chapter 5.
Yeah, that excerpt is from the chapter, as Paul mentioned, of the people trying to escape by any means possible. In this case, those up in the northern part of Germany, and their only way out was by boat. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Paul's going to play another clip on that. Stop me if you are going to do that, Paul. But
no.
The world's greatest nautical disaster was not the Titanic, was not the Lusitania, even though we've had a lot of documentary programs and books written on both. The world's greatest nautical disasters occurred at this time that Paul was talking about in his narration, on the Baltic Sea, when ships, sometimes they were old cruise liners or freighters, or even smaller boats, were crammed packed with people trying to escape the land by sea to get to a safe place in Germany. That would be the western part, which was still in German hands. And so you had this incredible mob of civilians trying to get passage on whatever ship was available. On the Wilhelm Gustloff, it was an old cruise liner.
Yes.
Built to carry roughly 2,000 people and crew. When the boat finally left port with its cargo of terribly frozen refugees, it had roughly, by the time it left harbor, roughly anywhere from 9,000 to 10,000 refugees on board. And once it got into the sea, there was lots of ice still in this black Baltic Sea. And at that night, two torpedoes from a Russian submarine hit the boat, and even though the ship didn't sink right away, and the people were encouraged to go back in out of the 20 below degree razor sharp wind, the boat did finally start turning over and started to capsize and sink. But that ship went down, and I think only a few hundred at most survive, but it took with it roughly 8,000 to 10,000 people. That is the world's greatest nautical disaster. Nothing even comes close. Certainly not the Titanic with 1,500 dead or the Lusitania with 1,200 dead. We're talking here anywhere between 8,000 and 10,000. This happened over and over and over again. Not as many people on the as was on the Wilhelm Gustloff, but 5,000 on one ship, 4,000 on another, 2,000 on one ship that actually made it to safety but was bombed by American bombers as it docked, as it tied up to its dock. 2,000 went down right there in its slip. 2,000 people died right there in safety. This is just part and parcel to World War II. This is, and I've got to say this, the Russians knew who they were doing, what they were doing. They knew these were refugee ships. There was no German, no large German naval vessels still floating on the Baltic Sea at this time. They were all smaller ships or had been sunk or blown to bits in their ports. So the Russians knew, that is the Soviets knew that these were refugee ships, and yet they still went ahead, just like Dresden, just to kill as many Germans as they possibly could. This is going on all over Germany. This just happens to be on the Baltic Sea, but the firebombings are continuing. The targets of opportunity are continuing. As you mentioned, Deanna, the bombing of even small towns now to kill as many people as possible. You know, here's an interesting fact nobody knows much about, I don't think. But after Dresden, after this hideous firebombing of Dresden, in which anywhere from 250,000 to 400,000, nearly half a million people died in 24 hours, there was a bit of contrition, you might say, among Churchill and other people suggesting that this may be excessive, what they just did in Dresden, the slaughter of people, this massive massacre that occurred. And yet, 2 weeks after Dresden, the small city of Forzheim, and I can't tell you where that's at. Yeah, roughly 50,000 people was bombed 2 weeks after Dresden. And I think it was something like 10,000 people died in that bombing, too. In other words, the contrition be damned, they still went ahead with their program of trying to kill as many Germans as possible. This is, there's so many other ways we could talk about this deliberate, intentional attempt to kill all Germans. Whether it be the trekkers, as Paul mentioned, trekkers. They called them trekkers because they formed these large treks of wagons trying to escape to some place of safety. Oftentimes, maybe most times, these were overtaken by the Soviet armored units, and they were simply squashed right in the middle of the road. The tanks didn't try to go out of the road. They would just simply run over the entire trek. We may be talking something a couple of miles long, actually. Men, women, children, babies, animals, pets, all squashed as flat as cardboard. Cardboard. People talk about it being as flat as cardboard. So the massacre, the slaughter, the sadistic. And Paul made a note, too, that this is toward the end of the war. Yes, it is. There's no doubt now in anybody's mind that there is not going to be some German secret weapon that pulls their chestnuts out of the fire. Germany is going to lose a devastating war, a devastating defeat, and no doubt a devastating peace is coming up too, which is true. But still, the massacre went on because guess what? The Allies knew there wasn't going to be any war crimes trial for them because they're winning the war. They're going to win the war, and they will be the ones who dictate the terms of the peace. And that is, they will also be able to set up their own courts to try the German war criminals. In other words, they've not only won the war, but now they're dictating the terms, and they're also writing the history. So that's what happens when you win a war like this. You can do anything you want. You can project your own crimes onto the defeated, because there's no way they don't have any newspapers, they don't have any radio stations, they don't have any authors that will have a best-selling book out there telling their side of the story. And that's the way it is until this very day, mostly. We're getting nothing but the victor's version of that terrible slaughter fest, that sadistic Jewish hate fest against all Germans, all Europeans, all whites generally. That's what we've got to this very day. And when you know the truth, like you and Paul and I and hopefully hundreds, thousands of your listeners, it's a very frustrating thing to hear people mouth the things about the good war and honor the greatest generation and to go on and on about 6 million dead Jews and to just continue and perpetuate this winner's version of history right up until now, 70-some years after the war. It's offensive. I find it extremely offensive that people can still say those things when the truth is out there. All they had to do was show a little curiosity, click their mouse, plug on Deanna Spingola, and hear the truth. Or many other, thank goodness, many other websites and podcasts and radio stations that are doing the very same thing. It's out there. It just takes a little bit of curiosity, a little bit of effort, and you can do it. No, someone like myself who writes these books, and I'm sure Paul who narrates these books, we continue. We will not stop because it is offensive to us that these lies are perpetuated and continue. And I guarantee you, none of us, of the three of us, none of us are going to stop. And our let's face it, our goal is that everybody knows the truth. It's at least going to be out there. And it's something like this, too. I think Paul and Deanna, you'll both agree. We're never going to reach the unreachable. Those people who will always ignore the truth, will always take the safe, pleasant way out of something rather than accept the truth and work for it and act upon the truth. But books like this, books like yours, Deanna, were never really intended to reach the unreachable. We're trying to reach those people out there who have that strong curiosity gene, who refuse to be lied to, who know something's rotten out there, but they're not quite sure what it is. That's the people we're trying to reach, these natural curious, the natural leaders of our people, so that when they finally get a hold of the truth, then they will do something. I guarantee you, because I made an analogy the other day, and it's something like this. There are fissures in the earth, fissures, and we're trying to fill those fissures. We're trying to fill them with the reachable people out there. And eventually, when we get those fissures filled, then we're going to have an earthquake. And the other people, yes, they will simply, as they've always done, be, weakness is drawn to strength, and our leaders are strong. And they will be drawn to these strong leaders because that's what weak people do. And that's our ambition, basically, is to reach the strong, make them stronger yet, and then the rest will follow in suit. The weak will always be there following because they always have. Right now, the weak are still following what they consider the strength out there. And that's the World War II Good War narrative type of thing. And what they read and see and hear on television and movies. But ultimately, that's coming to an end, and we all three sense it, feel it, know it. And that's why we continue to do what we do, because it doesn't seem like it's coming with the speed of light, but hey, I'm older than both of you two, and I can see it coming maybe a little bit better than you guys. It is coming, and are we going to make it to see that day? I don't know, Deanna, but I'm going to hang in there and try to see that day come.
As am I.
A little bit like the Berlin Wall. Who could have predicted that coming down with the speed of an avalanche? Who could have predicted that? I certainly couldn't have. That's critical mass. Europe reached critical mass then. And that's what we're hoping for right now when we're talking about World War II. Critical mass among the people when they finally all get it. And when they finally all have to get it, because it's not going anywhere, it's just going to be in their face every time they turn around.
Right.
I do go off on the tangents, as you know.
Yeah, I love your tangents. They're wonderful tangents. The other thing, too, is that when you look at some of the people, I don't want to, some of the people who participated, such as Eisenhower, and that he set up 200 encampments to house Germans who made it through the war. And these encampments were, they had no buildings. They were mud. They had no food, no water. And there were 200 of them. And he was, of course, rewarded with the presidency following that. But while he was in Europe and directing some of the warfare, he was he had a driver that was his mistress. He was just a piece of garbage, the same as Churchill, just big pieces of garbage. Anyway, we have a quick break, and we will take calls in the next hour. We will be right back.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard. Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Alrighty, we are back with our guests, Michael Thomas Goodrich, the author of Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 through 1947, came out in 2010. Notice that it covers 3 years. It's filled with heart-rending first-person accounts of what happened. And then our other esteemed guest is Paul English, who narrates the book. His website is hellstormaudiobook.com. And,
You know, Deanna, maybe this is a place for me to get in a shameless advertisement, but my most recent book was a follow-up book to Hellstorm.
Right.
Called
yes.
Summer 1945, Germany, yes. Japan, and the Harvest of Hate.
And
you can tell from the subtitle that not only am I talking about Germany and what it went through, but
yes.
also Japan.
Japan.
And anybody who's read that book, I can tell you that they know that Japan went through very much of what Germany went
exactly.
through.
Exactly.
And Paul mentions that Dresden was totally unnecessary. The war was won by the Allies. They had absolutely no reason on earth to destroy this beautiful, magnificent city and nearly 500,000 people.
Right.
Well, I could say the same thing for Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yes.
It was the very same thing. It was simply Americans could show off their power. They could test the atom bomb. They could perhaps...
And that's what they did.
Do a fake on Russia to show them that we've got the bomb, you don't. But they had no... There was no reason... The war was already lost for Japan. They've been trying to surrender since January of 1945, and yet the Americans still went ahead with this
and bombed them.
Yeah,
terrible! That book is. I have it sitting here on my desk. Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. It's a must read. Also, in fact. Paul, you should do this one next. I know that we talked about that before, but if you could narrate that, it would be super.
Oh, I probably could. My only sort of comment about it was that it being more of an American
right.
situation, it might be more appropriate to have an American voice narrated.
Oh, but whereas, your voice is so good. It's okay.
It's universal. As far as I'm concerned, it's the universal English, and don't forget the Brits were involved in the war, the Pacific War, also, Paul.
Absolutely.
With Japan. And
yeah, I know. My dad was stationed out there. That's where my dad was involved with.
Oh, really?
Okay, so then you.
Yeah, he was in the Royal Navy, and he was out in Singapore and places like that. So he was a very young man at the time. So
both my dads were involved in World War II. One. An island hopping Marine fighting from Guadalcanal all the way to Okinawa. Yep. And another dad, adoptive dad, who fought in the European War. So, yeah, I love both of them, but, there was no way for them to have an alternative view then. The same culprits had the newspapers, radio.
Right.
So that was their. They did what they thought was the right thing at that time.
That's right. They did.
All right. We're at the top of the hour. We will take your calls in the next hour at 800. What is our phone number? 800-313-9443. Be right back.
That neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.